curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Soans, and I am back for another episode with Ron Kitchens. And Ron, how are you feeling today?
I am awesome. It is a great day.
Well, there you have it, folks. He is awesome. And I have to tell you that I know part of the reason that he is awesome is that he's pretty jazzed up about today's conversation, because we've been talking about this internally as we are embarking on a season of another round of kind of planning for the next year. And, you know, kind of the opportunity to reflect on 2020, which is a wild adventure, and then kind of fast forward into 2021. And whenever you're planning, you start thinking about, if we really wanted to do that, like to reach that goal, who are the right people on the bus for that? And so I am going to be asking Ron today on the podcast to just really talk a little bit about how he challenges our team here at Southwest Michigan First to really reach their full potential. And so not him as a leader. We know he reads a lot, and we've talked a little bit about his strategy for his own, you know, management of his leadership. But I want to pick your brain today, Ron, on how you just kind of have developed this really good pulse on how to motivate people and to align them with their strengths and give them the right amount of vision, but the right amount of runway to do amazing things. And then how do you course correct when things kind of maybe get off track? So I know that's a lot to talk about in an intro, but just thinking about the team here, and as we went into the planning, I felt like I would love to hear your perspective on how you have developed this kind of gut instinct of when somebody needs that extra push or that extra vision. And is that something you honed over time, or is that something you feel like you kind of innately had and you've just kind of been able to nurture over time?
Well, that's a great question. I think for me, I am a fanboy of people. So I see people and see the amazing capacity in them more oftentimes than they've seen themselves. And that is it, you know, I say that, and so I'm not being arrogant, or aren't I a soothsayer, is that I've seen more of the world and can go, oh, you look just like the best I've ever seen do this. Or you look like this person, you talk or you think this way. And so and part of it is, and we've talked about this. So the form of dyslexia that I have allows me to see patterns that other people don't see. The easy way to describe that is the puzzles that are find a word puzzles, where you circle the word and it might be backwards or upside down, but it's mixed amongst all these letters. I never knew why people found that hard to do, because I can see those patterns immediately. It's just every word pops out. It's like 3D, but it's the form of dyslexia I have, that I see patterns. So when I'm getting to know somebody, I see the pattern of their behavior against the pattern of other people's behavior. So I can go, oh, wow, you look just like this person that I may know, or maybe somebody I've just read about. And I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm in love with your potential. And I didn't know for years why because I wasn't diagnosed with dyslexia until, you know, my 20s, and didn't really understand it till then my 40s. And now it's kind of a superpower. I don't think of it as a learning disability. It's part of my superpower. And so when I combine that with our belief that people are the CEOs of their own responsibilities, all of a sudden we go, okay, let's make sure you have responsibilities that are in line with what we see as your superpowers. What are you going to be great at? And sometimes that's really hard for people. Sometimes we're wanting more for people than they know ever existed or they could ever have. But that's really exciting. Now, I mean, the downside of that is there are times I want more for people than they want for themselves. And then I end up being really disappointed because, well, how could they not go take advantage of this? Well, maybe they're just not ready at that point in their life. Maybe they have other priorities. Maybe fear is holding them back from being great. The fastest person in the world rarely wins the Olympic medal. The person that wins the Olympic medal is the person who works the hardest and is one of the fastest people in the world. That's the difference. And so maybe I'm just a coach who can spot the fast runners and then give them the resources they need to win the gold medals.
So I think that you do have that superpower, Ron, and I've seen it in action, and you are very quick to pick up on people's talents, or, you know, I like to talk in strength language because that's my background. You see a lot of those strengths. But what I want to hear your perspective or your thoughts on, you know, you see somebody's strengths. You kind of recognize their potential. And I have seen you really push people, like really, really push people, but know almost like when to pull off the gas. You know, you kind of like ride it really hard for a minute and then you kind of give everybody a little bit of a pause. Is that just like a gut instinct? Like, are you just observing and you're like, oh, I think they've hit the tolerance point for a minute? Or how are you, is it an intentional strategy? Like, how are you kind of like collecting your thoughts around how you're coaching in a way, even though you don't have a lot of these people as your direct reports? It's kind of an interesting way that you're still coaching, even though you may not be directly meeting with them one-on-one.
Yeah. And I've thought a lot about that. And part of it comes from, I sit on the board of a company that we were discussing potential. There was a hole in the organization and one of three people were going to get promoted. And so the board were debating which person is going to fill this career-changing role. Now, eventually the other two may get there, but right now there's one hole somebody's going to fill and it will be career changing and life changing for their family. And so we're discussing each candidate. And at the end of it, the chairman of the board asked what I thought. I said, well, you know, I know that, you know, the female candidate has children at home and has a busy life. And I don't know about the men candidate. So yeah, they have kids at home. Well, why didn't we bring that up? And it was funny, another board member then wrote me a note. She actually published something on her own blog about that experience, that it took a man to ask the question about why we had a bias against women. I wasn't thinking of it, of this bias against a woman. Clearly, it wasn't intentional. No one was being intentional limiting it, but it was this idea that the human capacity wasn't what we were talking about. And it comes back to me of this idea that I see more for people than they see for themselves, not because I'm smarter, but because I've seen more. That I've, you know, it's the, and I use this analogy way too much, but it's, you can't describe the ocean unless you've seen it. And so I can describe to you what it feels like when I went to Hawaii and the big waves were in these 50-foot waves, and that when they would pound, literally your feet would disappear in the sand from the moving of the earth underneath you. And the spray would hurt your face. And it was so loud. And one of the most amazing, inspiring things I've ever seen were these giant waves. I can tell you about it. And you can feel my excitement, but you don't really know what it's like. So if I want you to know what it's like, I have got to take you to the waves. And so for our team and the people around us, the organizations we coach, our job is to take them to the waves. Now, whether you want to surf that wave or take a photograph of the wave, just enjoy the wave, you want to meditate for the wave, you want to have a yoga class for the wave, I can't determine those things, but I can get you to the wave and say, I think you're a big wave appreciator. And I think that's what I so want to do, is make people aware of what their potential is, because the world does a really good job of telling us what we're not. You're not fast enough. You're not pretty enough. You're not smart enough. You're not a man. You're not a this. You're not a that. And I don't want that to matter. I want to go, oh, no, no, I got you. Get in the car and I'll drive. But then we're going to get to the point that I'm going to go, you know what? You got to drive the rest of the way. And there's enough gas to get you to the end. And you can wander a little bit on the trip. But if you wander too much, you're going to run out of gas. Now put your foot on the floor and go. And I think that's the key to growing people. And I think one, it's the key to why our organization is so successful, is this idea that, you know, you come in at an entry level and we're going to start pouring into you and figuring out where your talents are maximized for you to be happy, not for us to be happy, but for you to be happy. And if you do that, we hope it's with us, but if it's not, we then want to be able to brag about you and be quoted in the press release for your next job saying how amazing you are.
I like that wave analogy. And I think that you really hit on the head. You really do want people to be able to see and explore different things. And I like how you ended with, I'm going to give you access to a lot of, you know, wave moments, but at some point I'm going to turn the wheel over to you and you're going to only have so much room to wander because you have to get there before you run out of gas. And I think that really puts into perspective. I mean, I've been working here for 7 years, but that really does explain my journey. You know, like there were moments where I was like, why are we looking at this? Like what's the point of this article that you left at my desk? And so you almost like shared a lot. And then at some point you were like, okay, it's go time for you. And here's where you need to go. And I think that is really amazing when you have a leader that does that. But I think for you, what's really interesting is you still have the ability to do that, even though you're not, as I mentioned previously, like our organization has grown. And so when it was 5 people, it was really easy to customize that for people. But now you've had to start to think about, I can do that to a certain extent as a leader, like Ron Kitchens can, but I also have to establish kind of an organizational culture around that. So I'd like to spend a little bit of time talking about how the organization can also create values and systems that really help support that thought process of, you know, we're going to believe more for you than you necessarily believe for yourself so that we can get you to your highest potential. And I think one of those things always comes from the senior leader, and that's the belief in the team. And can you talk about how you intentionally make sure that our team knows where you stand in terms of your belief that we are the right people to do this work?
Yeah, I think the My Fair Lady thing called the Pygmalion effect. So I can tell you the Broadway show and we can sing songs from there, but Pygmalion effect says, you know, essentially that if you will reach a pinnacle higher based on the belief system of the people around you. So there have been lots of speakers that said, you know, you're a culmination of the 5 people you hang out with or the 5 books you read or, you know, all of this input into you. But we know very simply that people who have a cheering section for them running a 5K finish the 5K and they do it faster time. We know as simple as that. We know that a child's performance at a fourth grade dance recital is better if they know their parents are in the audience rooting for them. So we all need a rooting section, but we also need people who can expose us to greatness. There's a reason that coaches' children end up, in a lot of cases, being better athletes, more successful. I shouldn't say better, more successful athletes in competition. It isn't because they have better skills, but because they have more knowledge and somebody cheering them on. So if we know that works with children, why wouldn't that work with adults in the workforce? Why would we be saying, you look like the best X. Let me introduce you to somebody who you can learn from. Let me expose you to those things. And, making this idea of learning one of the most important components, we call them axioms in our organizations, that we're constantly learning. You join our team, you better be a reader. Well, if you're not a reader, you can't join the team. We're not going to let you join because you have to read. Your first year, you're going to read 18 books because we're going to give you 12 and then we're going to read 6 as a team. And so the first year is tough. It's graduate school. And you better be ready for it. But that's what it takes to be part of our vocabulary. But the other thing is you have to know what success looks like at different levels. So if you're going to be a boxer, it's great to have a Muhammad Ali poster on the wall. But you need to know what training you have to do and what weeks you have to win to be able to get to that point. And you mostly can't do that for yourself. Even with all the knowledge in the world, and all the Google of the world, you can't do that for yourself. You have to have a coach, a mentor, somebody in your life lifting you up.
Absolutely. And I think that ties into, a lot of research being done right now around planning and the fact that as humans, we want to start with a plan. At some point we can explore and explore and explore, but then we need to know what the plan is in order to do our best work. And obviously that plan changes. And, we have a culture here of, we have to fail fast. So a lot of times we make plans and we execute them and we learn very quickly that we made some errors along the way, or the timing of that particular program or, initiative that we're doing just wasn't right. And maybe we needed to start in a different place. But we have that culture of fail fast. Like, as soon as you realize that this isn't right, like, let's raise the red flag and go back to the plan. Go back to the plan.
Well, and that, let's point out to both point leaders and the people working under them, you have to have an agreement that failure is public. No, you don't have to do it on Main Street, but within the organization, you have to look at failure as tuition paid to learn a lesson you pay the tuition once, but everyone in the organization gets to take the class. And so that's where we in the past have had some cultural problems, where people wanted to hide their failures and were embarrassed. And I'm like, oh no, I don't want you to do it again, but let's celebrate it so we can all learn from it, so we don't have to ever pay that tuition again. But you have to have that agreement up front, and it has to be, and if the failure is big enough, throw a lunch. Buy everybody lunch and treat it as a case study. Here's what we did. We made the best decisions we could make with the resources and knowledge that we had. Here's why it didn't work. Now let's never, ever pay that tuition again. If you have that as your basic commitment, man, the roller coaster just goes faster and faster and faster.
Yeah. And people are paying a lot of money to go to conferences and different events right now to basically learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah.
Essentially, there's whole conferences that are kind of branded around the idea of like, let me tell you what I did that I hope you never do, so that people can kind of learn quickly from other people. So I think it's fascinating. So just to kind of highlight, you really, when I pressed you on like how culturally you are supported in this work of helping people reach their full potential, you really kind of talked about, you know, setting that vision and setting high expectations, because people need to know not only what they're good at and for them to see the waves, but also eventually to know there's very high expectations. We know people rise to the occasion when they know the expectation. And, you know, kind of having that plan so that people have a roadmap to follow with a little room to wind off. But if eventually we got to get to the destination and you need to have enough gas in your car to do it. And then we talked about that fail fast as well, and kind of the permission to talk about our mistakes and learn from one another. So I want to end with just your ability to push people out of the status quo. And as leaders, we all fall here. And sometimes it's because we are running out of energy. Sometimes it's our passion for something that we started with has shifted. And it's really hard as humans to admit when that's happened, when the shiny ball next door has your attention instead of what maybe you're really started out to do. But for lots of reasons, people hit kind of a plateau in their performance. And how do you, as a leader, when you have somebody who you know has great potential, who they've demonstrated great potential, but you just kind of see them stuck in that same level of potential, and obviously eventually start to feel threatened by people who may be outshining them in some way because they have allowed themselves to become stagnant in that space. How do you push people out of that? Like when you notice that one of our team members here is just, you know, maybe kind of going through the motions, doing great work, great individual contributor, but is just kind of stuck in terms of where their growth is. They're not growing anymore. They're just staying in that place. What do you do as a leader?
I think you have to look at whether you have a foundation problem or you have an environment problem. So Lynn and I, years ago, must be 25 years ago now, had a nice house in kind of an old neighborhood, but we really wanted to live in kind of the best neighborhood in town. It wasn't a fancy town, but it was more than we could afford. And I'd heard about a house that had some problems, and it had been rented out for 5 years, and it was rough. And I called the realtor about it, and the realtor said, "Oh no, the foundation has cracked and has this major break in the floor." So I said, "Well, maybe I could fix it." We really wanted to live in this neighborhood. And so I go and I look at it and realize it doesn't have a crack in the floor. The renters ran a great big coaxial cable for a sound system underneath the carpet. And what the experts all said was a cracked foundation was a cable that, you know, the first took 10 minutes to pull that cable out from underneath the carpet. And then a problem that discounted the house by 50%. We bought a house we couldn't afford for 50% of what it was worth because the experts said there was something wrong. And every time I see a behavior that's incongruent to me, I want to know, is the foundation really broke? Is the house really need to be torn down? Or did somebody just run a cable underneath the carpet? It's an environment problem. So, you know, for me, then the only way to do that is to dig in, is to pull the carpet up and look underneath, you know, is to bring people in and say, "Hey, first thing you need to know is I love you." And we say love. I know some of you out there just, oh, a heart attack. We're not talking about eros love. If you look at the ancient Greek, there's 7 words for love. You know, we're talking about agape, about community love, that responsibility to each other that transcends the transaction. So when we say I love you and I love what you do and mean to the organization, you and your family are important to me, but I don't get what's going on. So can we talk about that? A lot of times there's an environment problem. A lot of times it's, I don't want to tell anybody, but I'm having marriage problems. I didn't want to tell anybody, but, I'm having to work a second job because my spouse lost her job. There's a problem there that we have the resources to deal with almost always. And even if the resources is just grace, is just saying, you know what? We need to sort this out, but we got 8 weeks to sort it out. Let's figure it out together. But you gotta ask those questions to first say, how do I serve you? And how do I honor our relationship and our commitment together? Second thing is people have to know what winning looks like. And, I've shared this before that, I coached Kelsey, my daughter, in upward basketball. It's a great basketball program. Matches kids by talent, make sure no team is runaway and dominant. But when the kids are younger, they don't keep score. Well, I can tell you, my kids always knew what the score was. The end of the game, they always knew what the score was because that's human nature. People want to know what the scores are. So we have to tell people what winning feels like. And now in today's world, COVID has shown us that we used to think that winning was a bit like a basketball game or football. You got so much time. There's so many timeouts. You can adjust it and spread things by manipulating the rules a little bit, but it's a finite thing. What COVID has said is more like three-dimensional chess. At the end, we still got to capture the king, but how we do that and the timeline we do that in and the process we do is change some. Some of it's not great. Some of it is amazing. But we have to, as leaders, be willing to have those conversations. But at the end, capture the king is what we, in fact, have to do. And then I think we have to have an honest bottom line and say, first thing, I love you. First thing, I want you to always be successful and feel safe. But no, I can't put 28 other people's mortgages at risk if you long-term can't produce and be part of this team. Doesn't mean you're not a bad person. Doesn't mean I don't want you to come to my Christmas party every year. But know that maybe you don't want to run this fast anymore. Something's changed in your life. The direction we've gone in because our customers require that we go in those directions doesn't work for you anymore. It doesn't mean that you're a bad person and I'm a bad person, but we have finite outcomes that we have to achieve. And I want to do that together. But if you can't do that, then we have to make decisions and let's be straight up transformative and transparent about what those actions are. And here's what that looks like. No fear, no condemnation, not trying to build maximum anxiety. They're not short-term. Either you produce by Tuesday or we're kicking your butt out of here. That's crazy because we all got here together. In our team, it's a little different because the way we hire, everybody who's here today selects the next person on the team. So we don't have bad hires. We don't make those mistakes. So we know these are good people whose environments may have changed or their structure may have changed. We have to acknowledge that, deal with it as it comes.
Yeah, I think that's a really great approach. And I hope that today's podcast has just allowed you as listeners to just be inside Ron's head in terms of how he is noticing when people have potential and how he's really, coming alongside them, showing them opportunities, showing them what success looks like, and then finding opportunities to create a culture around that individual that helps to support them so that it's not just, if you have access to Ron, you have access to growth. It's more if you have access to this organization, you have access to growth and obviously to Ron's leadership. So Ron, thank you for another conversation today. I know this was a topic that you were excited and pretty jazzed up to talk about. So I'm going to let you close it down today in terms of what you hope that the listening audience, you know, if you could give like the last soundbite that you hope they have in their ears as they start the day or finish the day, whatever time they're listening to this, what is your hope for our listening audience right now?
Trust each other. Trust each other. Trust each other. Trust each other. You will be disappointed. It's not a perfect world. But by extending trust and grace and love to each other, what you do is you provide racing fuel to your car, not regular fuel. So even if you have disappointments, you are so far metaphorically down the road, so much more success, so much more fun, so much more outcome, that those little disappointments that you're going to have become a marginal issue for you. So over trust, over believe in people, over love, and know that you'll overachieve.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Ron, for another great episode. And I look forward to connecting with you next week.
We'll see you next week.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.